Good day, listeners. My name is Taylor McClure, and you are tuning in to CIDI's daily news show, Township's Daily News Bits. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about a recently adopted bill known as Bill 11. In early June, the Quebec provincial government adopted Bill 11, an act to amend the act respecting end-of-life care and other legislative provisions. After local funeral director Mathieu Baker brought the subject of medical assistance in dying back to the attention of legislators. Mathieu is the owner of Complexe Funéraire Bromesisquoi and Complexe Funéraire au Richelieu, and he has been offering a space for families seeking assisted death services outside of a hospital or long-term care facility, taking provincial legislators back to the table to review what was previously known as Bill 38. According to a written statement to CIDI from the communications team for the Ministry of Health and Social Services, Bill 11 brings about a variety of changes to Quebec's law on medical aid in dying. While medical aid in dying was typically viewed as being provided at hospitals, residential long-term care centers, at home, or in palliative care homes, Bill 11 provides for the possibility of receiving medical assistance in dying in another location, and it implements this possibility in provincial law. If a person wishes to receive medical aid in dying in another location, his or her request must first be authorized by the institution's professional services or nursing care director. However, a new provision of the Act specifies that no person may promote or advertise a good or service provided as a part of a commercial activity by associating directly or indirectly with medical aid in dying, or demand any sum related directly or indirectly to obtaining such aid. With these new changes being brought about, CIDI had the opportunity to gather a variety of perspectives on the subject of medical aid in dying and the impacts of Bill 11. First off, please enjoy a conversation with Mathieu Baker about his reasonings for providing medical aid in dying at his facilities. Mathieu, I wanted to thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to chat with CIDI. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
So Mathieu, we're here today to talk about medical aid in dying in the province. The province recently adopted Bill 11, which brings a variety of changes to the service. You are a funeral director here in Bromesisquoi, and you have been renting out your spaces, from my understanding, to offer this service for those that are asking for it. I was just wanted to start off by asking you why you decided to offer this service and why it was important to you to make it available.
Bill 11 basically came in place because of what I did. So I totally took the government by surprise, which they didn't know, or basically had no idea that we were offering this type of service. The government basically initially wrote out the law, like if the person was dying, you know, like in a hospital bed and not being able to move or totally inapt, which is not the case, because the law clearly says you have to be clear-minded, you have to have a terminal disease. But a lot of these people, they're totally aware, and they want to make sure that everything goes according to their plan. So the reason why I offered this service was pretty basic, because it was a high demand, because people don't necessarily want to die at their house, and they certainly don't want to die, go back into a hospital if they're not into the system, or even a lot of palliative cares don't necessarily like to deal with all of what comes around with medical aid in dying. Medical aid in dying has changed dramatically. You know, the funeral industry has changed the Quebecois, the people. It's changed the medical view. You know, it's changed a lot. So, and we're way ahead all over in the world. You know, like we're we're way up there as number wise. So, it's normal to have a lot of different opinions. But the reason why I started the service was just simple, because I just was listening to my clients' needs, and basically, that's what I simply offered, you know, my assistance and my help, and it was just sort of a natural process for me to offer that kind of service. So it took a lot of people by surprise, but it's nothing that we took lightly, or we sort of just
decided to.
We were associated with a lot of doctors, especially in the Haut Richelieu region. Here in Bromesisquoi, I've been established for over 100 years. So, we're well aware of the sector, but I think it was more natural in Saint-Jean because it's more urban and people live in high rises and they live in a 1.5 and they have four children and they don't necessarily want to die there. Mm-hmm. They want everyone there. They don't want to cause trouble for the funeral home when it comes time to do the removal. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of factors why we started to offer it. And quite honestly, I was very hesitant. There was two doctors who sort of persuade me to offer the service. So basically, that's where I'm at right now. But I'm super happy. I made it happen that,
Have you recognized the impact it's had on the clients that...
Absolutely. No. Mis à part, like us offering this service here at the funeral home, medical aid in dying has changed the funeral industry. I rarely get, 5 years ago or even, let's say 6 years ago, we didn't get any phone calls from people saying, oh, I'm going to die in 2 days at 2:00. You'd have to, come pick us up by 2:30 or maybe 3:00. And then, people are super nervous and it's normal, the person obviously receiving medical aid in dying has reflected on the issue and has decided to go with it. And that person may have 4 or 5 children who are not necessarily all on the same page. So there's a lot of tension and stuff to deal with when it comes time when the actual event takes place. So we're used to dealing with, with grief, and we're used to dealing with these people. We're already in contact with these people. I say these people are families. So it's certainly, to me, a totally, totally natural procedure.
Yeah, so basically you work with the doctors in the area and then they come here and they do the process, or how does that work exactly?
Yeah, so the person receiving medical aid in dying obviously has a choice of where they want to do it. If they decide to do it here at the funeral home, then obviously it's just the same procedure. The nurse will come and make sure all the medication is here in place, and if the person is apt and everything. And so nothing has changed. For the doctor, it's a neutral place. There's no smoking, there's no animals, there's no stairs. It's a commercial building. They have a separate office. They come in, they can even declare the death or, do their own thing. They have our staff to sort of brief them on how this state, mental state is of the family, certain particularities about how they want things done, which there is a lot. Some of these people, to them, that is the actual funeral. Let's say medical aid in dying is scheduled at 11 o'clock in the morning. The family would show up most likely around 9. They may have a cocktail hour. They may have a certain time designated for friends who would come from, let's say, 9:30 to 10. And then the friends would leave, and then there would be another moment of music and videos, sharing videos, and the doctor would come at around 11, a quarter to 11. So it's all very, very, very scheduled as to how it's going to happen, and we help facilitate all of that. So, and when the family leaves, they don't have to organize when are we going to show up. We're always there to make sure everything goes as smoothly as possible. Just like we would, on a funeral, because funerals have a lot of unexpected moments and unexpected emotions. So we're used to dealing with all that. So it's certainly...
It falls within your area.
It falls within our area. The law is quite clear. We're not allowed to promote it, which is fine. And we're not allowed to charge, which we would never charge, because that's sort of the doctors who would charge for the actual act. However, we're allowed to charge for, our services, the rent of the room, all of that stuff. It's just been unclear to me as to how I surprised the government. They changed the law within a week and a half, and then they've been silent. So I'm going to send an email out to the government and ask them, because I've been calling repeatedly, asking them to explain certain issues, because we've been having phone calls after phone calls after phone calls of families wanting clarifications, not just us, them as well. So it's kind of, I find, irresponsible for them to not answer my demands, or at least, you know, answer for the families who are going through this sort of difficult time. And
what are your concerns exactly about the bill?
Well, it's not that I don't want to promote it, but it's just that people have so many questions. Basically, I'm myself and maybe 2-3 other employees are the only ones who can answer all these questions, but I can't, not that I don't want to, but I can't spend an hour and a half, 2 hours on the phone explaining to people who have all these questions about medical aid and dying, which I raise the big issue. You know, oh, can we do it there, or can I not do it there? Some families want to tag us. They want to put it on Facebook. All these things are unclear to me, because I'd like to basically put a section on my website, medical aid in dying, the service that I offer, and not in this, I don't want to promote it. I don't want to put it in the paper, but I just want people to refer to it. If they call me, I don't have to spend 2 hours explaining what are the different options. And not that I'd love to if I do have time, but it's just that we're getting people from Gaspésie. I have a lady from Three Rivers who is coming to Saint-Jean to get medical aid in dying at her, in her building. I'm getting clientele of people who are not necessarily my sector. It's quite rare someone from Quebec City to come and die in Cownsville, per se. But This is sort of what's happening, because people have so many questions. I have a lot of people who I'd love to say, listen, I don't have time to go over all this over the phone right now with you, unfortunately, because I have a death call, or I have a family who's here waiting for me. I'll send you an email with it detailed as to what we're offered. As of now, I don't even know if that's, you know, legal. So with the new law that they went out, I find the government spent more time on the fines that a funeral home could get versus just explaining to us what we can do and not do. You know, they make us seem like we're criminals. You know, like, I'm already working with hand in hand with the Ministère of Santé of Quebec. So I don't know why they're so. My main goal is to answer all the questions and answer all the needs of my clientele. So if they continue to ask me the questions, I will answer, which I'm allowed to do, and also, you know, offer a space if that's what the families want. Their first initial reaction was negative, because it came out in the Presse, and the Ministère of Santé at 1 o'clock that same day said, oh my God, this is, how can this be, and blah, blah, blah. You know, 2 days later, there was another article in the Presse of all the doctors all over Quebec offering medical aid in dying, who said, what are you talking about? This is a sort of, this is a great thing. There's funeral homes all over in the Quebec territory in each sector. It would certainly alleviate a lot of pressure, which is, there's a lot of, still a lot of pressure in the hospitals.
Oh, yeah.
Especially here at BMP. They're talking about closing the emergency. Are you aware of this? So, you know, it's certainly, you know, troublesome. And I had a Zoom meeting, which I really didn't have a choice, with the Ministère that next following Monday. That was a long weekend of
Saint-Jean?
No, that was a long weekend of May 2 for
Victoria,
yeah. So on the Tuesday there, I had a meeting, which I didn't have a choice, and which was fine, and I answered all the questions, and they had more questions than I spoke, more than they spoke. They obviously saw my intentions were good and not bad, but they're I think it's good for them to ask all these questions. You know, they don't want it to be publicized, or they don't want to market medical aid in dying, which I totally understand. But, you know, I have shivers right now just explaining this to you. This is the most dignified, personalized service I have ever done. You know, to greet someone who's coming into your building, organizing from A to Z how it's going to happen, what songs they want to play. Do they want, you know, a glass of wine to be served? We have cameras. We can film the whole thing. We have videos. They play, you know, memorial they spend a beautiful moment, which we're sort of involved indirectly, sort of like we're involved on funerals indirectly. So it's such a beautiful, dignified service that it's sort of a shame that they think that we're going to, you know, do something negative with this service.
It seems like, from what I'm getting, it seems like it gives people more autonomy over how they want to spend their final moments as well. Like, it gives them more say in.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Here in Townsville, I have a beautiful outdoor gardens. We're planning one right now with someone who wants to do it, you know, outside, even if it's raining or whatever. We have it all planned out. You know, mm-hmm. The sky's the limit. You know, people want to have it as a memorable moment, which it should be, you know, and you honestly can't have that in a hospital where it's, you know, beige and there's nurses and other emergencies going on and so many factors which make it so unpersonal and just not enjoyable for the family.
And, you know, like you mentioned, like we've been mentioning, Bill 11 has been introduced. I wanted to ask you, as my final question, why is this debate so significant and why do we need to keep having this conversation around medical aid in dying, in your opinion?
Well, I think medical aid in dying, you know, Quebec has a lot of positive things, even though I know a lot of English people have the contrary effect. But I'm English and I'm also French, so I see both sides, and I think it's sort of a positive thing what's going on with medical aid in dying here in Quebec. If you look all over in Canada, like Canada has a different definition as Quebec. Quebec, it's very, very, very specific as to who's eligible to medical aid in dying. I would say the rest of Canada, it's more vague.
More broad.
They talk about a condition versus, so there's more debate and there's way more uncertainty. Here, it's very clear and it's very organized. I must say, you know, once you're once you've taken the decision as to you want medical aid in dying, it could happen, you know, within the next couple of weeks, if not even sooner. It's not the case in the rest of Canada. I think that's why it's so evolved here. It gives us a certain liberty. Look in France. I was interviewed by France 2, which is a big chain of TV in France, because basically in France, it's almost non-existent, you know, medical aid in dying. People are going to like Belgium to get medical aid in dying. So basically you need the means, you need the time, you need that's a lot of energy, and to go to a different country just to receive that. Here in Quebec, that's totally impossible, because the first thing, criteria of medical aid in dying, you need a medical card, so of Quebec. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. So a lot of people are looking at Quebec, and, you know, Quebec has done a lot of great things right now. But I think they need to do a lot of due diligence and also make things clearer.
Well, I wasn't sure if there was anything else that you wanted to mention, Master, but those are all the questions that I had for you.
No, that's good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. One of the individuals that played a major part in encouraging Baker to offer these services is José Poisson, who worked in the health field and returned to university to do a master's in applied ethics, focus on medical aid in dying, after realizing how some health professionals were uncomfortable with the service as a result of not being informed on the matter. She personally experienced medical aid in dying with her father when he grew ill, and emphasized the importance around having options for those seeking this service. She said that throughout her master's degree, her and her father talked about end of life. When her father realized that his condition would not improve, he opted for medical assistance in dying. Her father was a businessman who made decisions all his life, and he didn't want to see himself deteriorate any further.
Lorsque la loi sur les soins de fin de vie est arrivée en 2016, dans le fond, je travaillais en étroite collaboration avec les médecins. Puis, je me suis rendu compte comment ils étaient mal à l'aise par rapport à cette nouvelle loi-là. Ça changeait vraiment leur façon de faire. C'était une nouvelle approche. Puis, à ce moment-là, les médecins, on voyait qu'ils n'étaient pas à l'aise. c'est ce qui m'a convaincu de retourner à l'université et d'aller faire une maîtrise en éthique appliquée à l'Université de Sherbrooke. Puis j'avais décidé de mon sujet, qui était la relation du médecin avec l'aide médicale à mourir. Le titre de mon essai, c'était « L'aide médicale à mourir et le médecin, un outil d'aide à la décision éthique ». Puis, pour contacter M. Bettler, c'est ce qui est arrivé, c'est que mon père, un peu avant la pandémie, a commencé à avoir des problèmes de santé. C'est sûr qu'on avait beaucoup échangé, lui et moi, sur le temps que je faisais ma maîtrise, sur le sujet, sur les travaux que je faisais. On parlait souvent de l'aide médicale à mourir. Puis, quand mon père a vu que sa santé déclinait puis qu'il n'y avait pas moyen, dans le fond, d'améliorer sa situation, il a décidé de faire une demande d'aide médicale à mourir.
There were some difficulties around the decision, however. Poisson explained that her father didn't want to die in the apartment in the retirement home he shared with her mother. So she then suggested to do it in her own living room, but her children were left uncomfortable with the decision. So the only option that they essentially had left was the hospital, which wasn't the best location.
Lui voulait pas mourir à la maison. Il vivait en RPA avec ma mère, puis il voulait pas que ma mère ait le souvenir de lui mort dans leur appartement. Et là, moi, je pensais que ça pourrait être chez moi, puis mes enfants qui étaient pendant la pandémie revenaient à la maison, même s'ils sont adultes. Voulaient pas voir leur grand-père mourir dans une des pièces, là, je pensais le salon de la maison. Et donc, finalement, on s'est retrouvés à aller à l'hôpital. Puis, écoutez, il y a eu vraiment un bon service, le personnel était gentil, tout ça, mais l'hôpital, c'est pas vraiment le lieu parfait pour avoir une mort douce et sereine, là.
It was when she went to the complexe funéraire de Haut-Richelieu to establish the funeral services the family needed that she recognized the benefits of their approach and the location for medical aid in dying. She told CIDI that it was when the pandemic subsided that she contacted Mathieu at Complexe Funéraire du Haut-Richelieu to suggest that they offer their rooms when they're not in use to provide medical aid in dying. Poisson told CIDI that it was when the pandemic subsided that she contacted Mathieu at Complexe Funéraire du Haut-Richelieu to suggest that they offer their rooms when they're not in use to provide this new care. She said the funeral home was nice, with beautiful rooms and a terrace, and she thought to herself how good of a place it would be to offer medical aid in dying, and that would be a nice place to pass away. She said that Mathieu was not fond of the idea at first, and it took a lot of discussion with Baker and members of his team, including the funeral home's director André Gagnon, whom told Poisson that they didn't want to seem like opportunists. At first, they were interested in having her provide conferences on medical aid in dying for training and education because she did have her master's degree in the subject. But she, eventually, Mathieu, was convinced of providing the service.
Mon père est mort le 5 octobre 2020. Puis, naturellement, on avait fait affaire, c'était on avait choisi le complexe funéraire du Haut-Richelieu de M. Baker pour l'incinération de mon père puis ce qu'on pourrait offrir après, là, c'était pour avoir un service. Mais, fait que là, finalement, un peu plus tard, j'ai pensé à ça, je me disais, c'est tellement, ils ont un beau complexe avec des belles salles, il y a une terrasse, je me disais, mon doux, ça serait bien qu'ici, ils offrent l'aide médicale à mourir, que ça serait une belle place pour mourir. Ouais. Fait que donc, j'avais contacté M. Baker, puis là, lui, il était vraiment pas à l'aise, il trouvait pas que c'était une super idée, mais en discutant avec... On était avec Marie-France, qui est une fille qui travaille avec eux, puis dans le fond, André Gagnon, qui est leur directeur. André disait, bon, j'aimerais mieux avoir une approche plutôt que d'offrir ça. Je voudrais pas qu'on ait l'air opportuniste. Il dit, dans le fond, j'aimerais mieux qu'on ait une approche d'éducation. Fait que là, c'est là que je leur ai parlé de ma formation. Je leur ai dit, écoutez, si vous voulez aller de ce côté-là, offrir des formations, j'ai fait une maîtrise en éthique appliquée. Mon sujet était l'aide médicale à mourir. On pourrait facilement faire ça. Fait que c'est ce qui a fait que j'ai commencé à faire, dans le fond, des conférences sur l'aide médicale à mourir que j'ai adaptées grand public. Puis, fait que là, dans le fond, les choses ont déboulé, là, qui se sont retrouvées à offrir ce service-là, là, mais initialement, c'était pas ça qu'ils voulaient faire, c'était vraiment juste de la formation.
Poisson said that if we look at statistics, there are already 1% of people that weren't receiving medical aid and dying at the hospitals or in long-term care residences. There are already people receiving medical assistance and dying in other locations. She said that some doctors have provided the services in hotels beside water bodies where that was special to someone because it's where they grew up. In the law, according to Poisson, it says we have to put the person at the center of this decision. And she thinks that we have to respect the final wishes of the patient.
si on regarde dans la loi, si on regarde les statistiques, dans le fond, c'est qu'il y avait déjà 1% qui se faisait pas à l'hôpital ni à la résidence. Donc, il y avait déjà des gens qui avaient des aides médicales à mourir dans différents lieux. Si je regardais l'expérience des médecins, des fois, ça pouvait être dans des chambres d'hôtel. Il y en a qui demandaient ça sur le bord du lac de leur enfance. Donc, il y avait déjà cette...
Poisson emphasized that the end of life is still a significant moment and that people should have the right to choose and have options. She said that the hospital is not a calm place, it's not serene with all the activity going on. She said this time the majority of hospitals don't have a reserved space for medical aid and dying, a bigger room that is adapted for this service, and people find themselves in a standard hospital room with all the noise around them, the doctors, the nurses that are talking, and she emphasized it's just not serene. She said that those who are against other locations can continue to choose going to the hospital. They're not constrained to choosing a place that they don't want to choose. But she wants to at least see the possibility of other options be made available to choose the place they want to go.
Moi, je pense que les gens, dans le fond, quand on arrive, la fin de la vie, c'est quand même un moment important. Puis je pense que les gens doivent pouvoir choisir puis avoir des options. Comme je dis, là, mon père voulait pas le domicile, il voulait pas être à la maison, puis il restait que l'hôpital. Puis l'hôpital, moi je pense que c'est un lieu pour avoir tous les autres soins. C'est un milieu qui est pas calme, qui est pas serein parce que toutes les activités, vu qu'il y a pas, en tout cas présentement, dans la majorité des hôpitaux, il y a pas un espace réservé pour ça qui peut être un peu à l'écart avec une chambre plus grande, vraiment adaptée. Fait que là, si on se retrouve dans une chambre d'hôpital standard avec tout le bruit autour, les appels des médecins, les appels les infirmières qui passent, c'est pas un lieu serein. Fait que c'est pour ça le présentement qu'on avait juste ces deux-là. Moi, je pense qu'il faut ouvrir pour que les gens aient différentes possibilités. Mais les gens qui sont contre le fait que ça soit ailleurs pourront toujours choisir l'hôpital ou le domicile. Ils ne seront pas contraints de choisir un lieu qu'ils ne veulent pas. Mm-hmm. Moi, j'ai juste qu'il y a une possibilité d'option puis ouais. Que les gens peuvent, pour cette dernière volonté-là, choisir le lieu qu'ils veulent.
Recognizing a lack of awareness around the subject of medical aid and dying, Poisson is providing conferences in Bromissisquoi that will be open to the general public. These conferences will highlight what other countries are doing about end-of-life care, causes that have advanced end-of-life care in Canada, important dates, eligibility criteria for medical aid and dying, the medical aid and dying application process, what medical aid and dying is like, what the Commission on End-of-Life Care is and does, and statistics on end-of-life care. This is something that Bromissisquoi residents can look forward to in the fall, and information will eventually be provided through the Complexe Funéraire Bromissisquoi.
C'est que dans le fond, quand la loi est passée, c'est sûr que lire la loi, ça peut être compliqué pour plusieurs personnes. Fait que là, je me dis, moi, je fais vraiment un résumé, un condensé des choses, puis pour que les gens connaissent comment ça fonctionne, pour être plus à l'aise avec ce soin de fin de vie-là. Je parle de l'aide médicale à mourir, ce qui se fait. Dans le fond, c'est un peu un résumé de mon essai de maîtrise, de ce qui se fait ailleurs dans le monde, les causes juridiques qui ont fait avancer les soins de fin de vie au Canada, les dates importantes, les critères d'admissibilité. Bon, je parle aussi des directives médicales anticipées qui sont différentes de l'aide médicale à mourir, mais que les gens ont souvent tendance à confondre. Le processus de l'aide médicale à mourir, comment ça se déroule une journée? Qu'est-ce que la commission des soins de fin de vie qui surveille cette pratique-là, puis les statistiques. Enfin, vraiment, je couvre le sujet au complet. Puis après ça, les gens peuvent bon, naturellement poser des questions, échanger sur le sujet. Fait que c'est vraiment une formation là, dédiée à l'aide médicale à mourir. Tout le monde peut venir suivre cette formation-là. À l'automne, on va offrir aux deux places.
Parfait. Merci beaucoup encore, José. C'est vraiment apprécié.
Merci. Au revoir. Bonne journée.
The Ministry of Health and Social Services wrote to CIDI that Bill 11 has been eagerly awaited by society, in particular in order to introduce the possibility for a person diagnosed with a serious and incurable illness leading to incapacity to consent in advance to receiving medical aid in dying once they've lost their incapacity, to improve access to end-of-life care, and to enable a better assessment of the end-of-life care situation in Quebec. The principles of dignity and autonomy and decision-making are at the heart of the amendments, which is why the ministry deemed the amendments necessary. However, there has been some contention where it concerns the palliative care facilities in the province. Dale Weil, vice president of the Alliance des Maisons de Soins Palliatifs du Québec, highlight some concerns surrounding Bill 11. We hope that you enjoy our conversation and being provided with a different perspective. Dale, I just wanted to thank you so much for taking the time out to chat with CIDI today before we get into our interview. I just really appreciate your time.
It's a great pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
Now, Dale, you are the vice president, from my understanding, of the Alliance des Soins Palliatifs du Québec. And we are here today to chat about the new bill that was recently adopted by the provincial government, known as Bill 11, previously known as Bill 38, an act to amend the act respecting end-of-life care and other legislative provisions. Before we get into that a little bit more, I was just wondering if you could please start off by introducing yourself to our listeners and chat with us a little bit about the Alliance a little bit.
Of course. Well, first and foremost, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about this very important topic. And so I am Dale Weil. I am the Executive Director of the Teresa Deller Palliative Care Residence, which is a residence of 23 beds in the West End of Montreal, and also the Institute, Montreal Institute for Palliative Care, which is part of the residence focused on education and knowledge exchange and research to improve palliative care access for more people. I am also a member of the Alliance des Maisons de Soins Palliatifs du Québec, and on the board I serve as vice president. So a little bit about the Alliance. We actually represent 36 of 37 maisons or homes in Quebec, so there is a really very great representation. So of those 36 homes, 34 are for adults and 2 are for people under the age of 18. And there are also another 5 projects for new homes that are currently under realization. So this is a sector that continues to grow. Today, the Alliance members total 329 dedicated beds that provide palliative care in Quebec. And that takes care of, roughly speaking, about 30% of palliative care that is provided in Quebec. So we're a very important part of that service. And basically, the role of the Alliance, or our mission, is to group and support and represent and defend the collective interests of our members to help ensure their ongoingness and continuity. And so we have a number of activities underway to support them. And we also are a key link between all of the individual maisons and the government in various files. So that gives you a little bit about our, what we're all about. And of course, part of palliative care is serving patients to make sure they have the very best of care and towards the end of life. But that also entails supporting their families and loved ones. And so the impact we have is, you know, you can multiply the number of patients by quite a number of family members and loved ones. And we support them as well through caring for their patient family members, but also providing them with bereavement support. We are also have probably close to 400,000 hours per year that is provided by volunteers, which are very much a part of the palliative care model. So that gives you a little bit of an overview of what we're all about and what we represent.
Yeah, so you're definitely, palliative care homes are definitely a significant stakeholder in this, on this issue. Let's get into that a little bit more, if that's okay with you. Now,
sure.
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, the end-of-life care bill has been amended recently by the provincial government. Now, some of these amendments, like I mentioned, of course, affect the care provided by palliative care facilities in Quebec. And from what I got, looking on your website a little bit as well, there are some areas of contention, from my understanding, concerning certain amendments to the bill that I was curious to learn more about. I was just wondering, what about the bill concerns the Alliance exactly?
So I would tell you that the concern is really one of principle. And I'll just start by saying, there's one clause in the bill that has an impact on palliative care homes, and that is the clause that stipulates that all palliative care homes must provide medical aid in dying on their premises.
And there's a second part to that which says that they cannot deny admission to a person on the sole, for the sole reason that they have made a request for medical aid in dying. So before I talk about what our position is on that, I would tell you that today, and it's evolved considerably over the last many years, never have the homes been against medical aid in dying, and they have always respected the wishes of their patients, but historically a number would transfer patients to another location for the actual act of medical aid in dying if it was requested on their premises. But today, of the 36 maisons that provide adult palliative care, there are only four that do not provide it on their premises. So we're talking about four maisons, and of those four maisons, one is in a reflection period. Our principle is that the government should not be dictating our service offering, because for those homes that are thinking about it or may not be there, their timing, their local situations, their level of fragility and so on needs to be taken into consideration and respected. And so they should be given the time and the scope to make that decision on their own. Medical aid in dying is not a palliative care service. It's an end-of-life service, so they are two distinct services. Mm-hmm. That said, as I mentioned, most homes are enabling for patients that come and decide, that this is what they want. They are enabling it on their premises, sometimes with their own staff. Sometimes they are in collaboration with the local health regions who bring in the people that provide the actual final act, but most homes are taking care of the patients right up until right up until that moment. Our issue is one of principle, is that one, we need to respect the abilities of homes to do what they're able to do with their current realities, and two, the government should be allowing us our freedom and entrusting us to define what our admissions criteria are, because there are many, many factors in admitting patients, and there's a scarcity of palliative care beds in the province. So we need to allow maisons in their individual regions to have the criteria that enable them to maximize availability of palliative care for people that need palliative care. So that's our issue. That being said, we were asked to present when it was Bill 38, and then we presented again when it was Bill 11, and that is the position that we shared with the parliamentary committee. And in the end, the law came out as it did. And of course, our other after the law did come out, we did follow up again to voice our concern that there was an additional, from the first draft of the law, 11, to the final version, there was this addition in the criteria for admissions, which actually declared some conditions that they felt were important for our admission criteria. But when we've been in conversation at the actual parliamentary exchange, it was specified that there would not be any ministerial involvement in the management of our admissions process in our homes. So that came to us as a little bit of a surprise. We also had said that should government maintain the requirement for all of the homes in Quebec to provide provide medical aid in dying on their premises, that they should leave enough time for that to happen in a way that was manageable, and the period of time that has been given is 6 months, which is not a lot of time. That's basically where we're at. We also have made it very clear, and this is very important, there's a lot of focus, and of course Bill 11 is about medical aid in dying, but we like to reiterate that there's a relatively small percentage of the population for whom that is a request or a need. It's today less than 5%, whereas the number of deaths of Quebecers, I would tell you that about 70% of people that are dying in a year could benefit from palliative care. Some of them are, but some of them aren't. And we feel very strongly that access to palliative care remains a challenge, And it's a challenge both in terms of awareness, because many people, public sector as well as healthcare professionals, don't fully understand palliative care. The fact that it's not just in the last few days of life, the fact that it is something that should be available even when people are still under treatment in the whatever care settings they're in, and certainly it should be made available, and people should understand what it's all about as they get, you know, at a phase in their serious illness. It demonstrates that they could benefit from palliative care. So education is a big issue. And then in some regions, so are resources, that there are not enough beds for palliative care or not enough people in the various care settings that understand palliative care. And so we're very much committed to collaborating with the government to help with education to in our various health regions to provide mentoring to others. Some of us do actively educate others about palliative care, and we believe that there needs to be more focus on that. It is in the plans of the Ministry of Health. There are some plans around education and training, and those plans really need to be implemented, and we're there to help with that. So that's kind of our message. It's not just about medical aid in dying, and yes, we now we'll comply with the new law that's there, but we need to put more focus on education and building resources and training people in palliative care.
Yeah, you don't want the palliative care homes to just become to be looked at as a place where people can go and receive medical aid in dying. You want people to be aware that it's also a place where you can live out the rest of your days. From your comments.
Yeah, we're not a destination. Mm-hmm. Palliative care is an extra service. It's not a service of palliative care. No one would ever, hospitals transfer people to other places that have a better capability to provide services they can't themselves provide. We will keep people, and we'll keep people through the end of life, whatever their selection is. My point is that there's a greater percentage of the population that should be having access to palliative care, and there's not enough education about palliative care. So many maisons or homes receive people who are at a very late stage in their trajectory, and they should be admitted, they should be exposed to palliative care far in advance of when they come to us, and their well-being and their quality of life in the final days would be much better were they to come to us earlier. And I would say even before being admitted to palliative care homes, there's palliative care that's available in homes through CLSCs. There's palliative care that ought to be made available in long-term care facilities and so on well before people are at the end of life. So there's a lot of work to be done. For sure, we're not a destination for medical aid in dying, but because the purpose of our beds is for palliative care, and we must make sure that the most people possible have access to that palliative care, whether they end up deciding to have medical aid in dying or carrying out their lives to the very end without that decision. We more people need to understand what palliative care is.
You know, you kind of answered this question already. You were speaking about education, awareness, including when it comes to health professionals. But my next question for you was, what do you think the government can do to make things more clear when it comes to this issue? So I didn't know if you wanted to expand on that a little bit more.
Sure. So first I'm going to give you some statistics that we actually, the Alliance, along with the Montreal Institute and the Canadian Cancer Society, did a survey back, a month or so ago, because we wanted to have a good statistic on what is the level of understanding of palliative care in Quebec. So we did a survey through Ipsos Reid of 1,000 people over the age of 30. And I'm just going to give you some statistics that show you how difficult the situation is today, and that'll help to talk about what needs to happen. So of the people in the survey, the vast majority, well over 86%, I think is the number, believe that they understand what palliative care is all about. That said, the vast majority, when asked to describe what it is in their own words, believe it's pain relief in the final days of life. Well, wrong. And then when we ask them, do you think it involves different elements, most of them do not associate it to other symptom management. They don't associate it to supportive care or to psychosocial support. They don't associate it to helping for bereavement. And so they don't understand that palliative care is much more than pain management. So the what it is not well understood. And then the when. Most people think that palliative care is something for the last 2 weeks of life. So, again, they don't understand that it's something that can happen way in advance, not even months in advance, but even some years in advance, and certainly well more than 2 years before the end of life. Mm-hmm. So the what isn't understood, the when isn't understood, and the where isn't understood. Most Quebecers believe it is, yes, provided in palliative care homes that are specialized like ours. Good. Most also believe it's provided in hospitals, which it's actually not necessarily provided in hospitals, or it's inconsistent, shall I say. Mm-hmm. And a minority think it's available in home, which it is available in home or should be, and an even smaller amount believe it should be that it's available in long-term care facilities. So it's everybody's right to palliative care services wherever they are. So as much as we see progress made for medical aid in dying to make it available in more places, we need to see the same effort to make sure that people understand that it's their right to have palliative care mm-hmm. at an early stage in their disease trajectory and wherever they are. So that being said, that I just want to paint the picture. So what the government can do is, number one, they can provide more global public education about what palliative care is and its availability, so that more citizens understand it. And that can be done at a provincial level. There needs to be more training, and the government can sponsor more training. Again, we can help with that, but they need to free up healthcare professionals to train on palliative care. They need to recognize training, and they can also monitor a palliative care. So, and these are things that are in their plan. They just need to move forward with it. But mm-hmm. to have an observatoire that actually monitors palliative care and where it's given and when it's given, so that we can see how we're doing, because those statistics are not really available right now. Mm-hmm. So these are some examples.
Yeah, they have a responsibility to make people aware as to the options that are available to them here when it comes to making decisions for their health. It's extremely important that people are aware of that.
Yes, and freeing up some funds and resources so that we can, you know, move forward on some of those initiatives.
Now, I was just wondering, I am very curious to hear more about this. Are there certain amendments to the Bill 11, that the Alliance agrees with and that you think is taking medical aid in dying in the right direction?
So we don't have a position on anything other than because it doesn't touch us, and so we there are other groups that have their opinions on that. We don't pretend to represent, we don't have the expertise on some of the other amendments, which really relate more to people that have a long-term prognosis and want to, you know, make plans for the future. So that is not something that we take position on. Really, the one that we take position on is the clause that relates to palliative care homes. And as I say, our position is it's not one of agreeing or disagreeing with medical aid in dying. Most of us are providing the service. It's a question of principle mm-hmm. and dedication, as opposed to we've been independent in the past. We're partially subsidized by the government, but also largely subsidized privately. Our feeling is that the will of the Maisons should be that we should be given our own timing. That said, we will work with the bill, and we will collaborate to support the other Maisons who are currently not providing the service, and we will help them through the transition.
Yeah, we actually have a palliative care facility right here in our own region, and they do wonderful work, and they provide services to both English speakers and French speakers. And yes, it's just the role that they play in the community. It's recognized how important it is.
Yeah, and I would say that's very typical, because we are the specialists in our respective regions. People are referred to us from various settings, from home, from hospital, from other settings, but we we are a go-to for expertise. We are a go-to for, you know, for collaboration. We have community services as well. We go out and many of us reach out into the community ourselves, for example. I would say that there are a number of palliative care residences or maisons, as you might call it, in our respective communities, which is why we are there to help the government as they move forward on these various initiatives, because we can play a big role.
Well, those are really the questions that I had for you, Dale, surrounding palliative care and medical aid in dying in regards to Bill 11. But please feel free to mention anything else that you think would be important for our community to be aware of in terms of palliative care, medical aid in dying, anything that you think would be important that I may not have touched on.
Well, my thing would be what we can all do about it as citizens is ask about palliative care, ask to understand more about it. And if you're not getting the answers, then ask to speak to someone who can give the answers. So it's very important that it's a topic of discussion and that people understand their rights. And there's something called advanced care planning, which enables people to think about when they're not in crisis, what are their important objectives in life that can impact on their care plan. My advice is that people need to take charge of their own lives at a time when they are not necessarily thinking about end of life, but rather, you know, when they can make decisions and choices of sound mind and when they're not feeling, you know, in some kind of a crisis. And my advice is that all people should take an interest in their end of life or even approaching end of life care and find out more about palliative care. Because as I say, most people, including healthcare professionals, haven't really fully embraced and understood what it's all about.
Well, thank you so much, Dale, for providing your perspective. I really appreciate it. It was so important. I'm so glad that I had the chance to speak with you. Thank you so much again for taking the time out of your day to do that.
It's a pleasure.
Township's Daily News Bits is a program sponsored by Local Journalism Initiative.